Welcome to Mental Armor, the podcast for police wellness, mindfulness, mental health, and resiliency. My name is Detective Ben Melendrez.
And I'm Dr. Niels Rosenbaum. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, everybody. Joining us today is Marissa Mays, a local celebrity. Thanks so much for being here.
You're welcome. I think I'm a past local celebrity, but that's okay.
No, I think your celebrity status is at the highest it's ever been. I think the only reason we were able to get you on the show is that you know this gentleman sitting to my right.
That's right.
Apparently very I lucky. Do, and I know him very well. But am I allowed to disclose that? Because
yes.
Here you are, Dr.
Yes, you are.
Rosenbaum. Uh-huh. But at home, he is Honey.
Yes. On a good day.
Usually on a good day.
Usually.
I don't say Niels unless I need you for something or I'm upset.
That's true. That's
usually true. It's just...
Thank you, sweetheart, for coming.
You're welcome. You're welcome. We're married, by the way, just so everybody knows.
So can I call you Honey? Or
So why don't you give us the background of why you were a celebrity?
I was a reporter and news anchor for an ABC affiliate in Albuquerque for 20 years. I landed that job straight out of college and then never left and just continued to go from a reporter to an evening anchor and then decided I wanted to do mornings and I anchored for 16 years on the morning show.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's a long time.
Career. You do not look old enough to have been.
No.
Oh, that's very kind.
Our podcast is really about taking care of mental health, mindfulness, and we're talking to people from around our community. And, you know, being a journalist, there's a lot of trauma. There's a lot of, you know, controversy. And I'm sure that you were pretty aware of that when you were working there. Does any story stick out in your mind as one that probably you'll carry with you for the rest of your life?
You know, there are a couple. It is difficult, and your job on air is to maintain your professionalism, and you're trying to convey a story. This isn't about you and your emotions. You're supposed to remain very neutral, but you're also human. And I remember when the Cerro Grande fire started up, and I was a new reporter, and that happened in 2000, I believe. Or 2001, I don't remember, but it was in Los Alamos. And that was my hometown, and it was burning up.
Oh, man.
And they sent me as a reporter out there. And I stayed for a few days, and it was just first responders and reporters, and that was it. And they took us, I got one of the very first tours through Los Alamos after everything had burned. And this was before cameras came in, before everything. And I just got to see that destruction of my hometown. And that was very difficult. That was very emotional. And the second one that sticks out for me, there are many throughout. Whenever we had to do stories that dealt with children, horrible, horrific stories, that was always just awful for me. And I remember sometimes coming home and just crying because it was a lot to take in, a lot to talk about. But and now her name escapes me, but there was one in particular that was just so gruesome and awful. And I think on air, that was one of the only times that I actually couldn't speak. I got to that point where I just couldn't say anything.
Victoria Martin?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. It's interesting because when I hear you talking about this, it's sort of the same for police officers where at the scene you're expected to, you know, be, you know, sort of put together and people are looking to you for answers. And really what you want to do is freak out or cry or whatever the case is. But Victoria Martin was a very difficult case. And I feel so bad for all the folks that had to interact with that scene or cover that story. It's a very, very awful thing that happened.
Yeah, that was terrible. I remember I was called out on that. I mean, should we give the listeners a very quick summary?
That's up to you.
It was a young girl who was basically murdered, dismembered, wrapped up in a carpet and burned and just left there. I mean, awful by meth head caregivers. Yeah, awful.
That night, and this is what's interesting about our relationship with Niels, is that I knew his job, and here he works with the police department, and I'm a reporter. So typically those two do not mesh well. And in fact, when we started dating, I remember Neil's telling me that his friends were like, you can't date her.
They explicitly said, you don't tell her right? anything.
For the record,
don't
that was not me.
You can't date her.
Right. Yeah. But we had an understanding, and that was outside of our professional jobs, we respected what we each had to do. And so he had gone out to that scene, and thank goodness he didn't have to go in. He didn't see it personally. But then he came home, and I was on my way to work. I would leave around 3 a.m. And I was on my way out, and he said, I just came from something that's going to be awful. I can't say much about it, but it's going to come out. And it was really bad. And he sort of gave me a rundown, and I had to just go to work, and I didn't say a word, and we let it just unfold as it should with the media. But my job with that doesn't even compare to what officers go through. I mean, not even a fraction. I'm relaying something that I've heard about that can evoke emotions in you, but I cannot imagine showing up to scenes like that when you're a parent, when, I mean, there's no way that you could become numb to it. It's not possible. I think we're human, and I really admire these men and women that have to deal with that and try to maintain some kind of composure, because I don't think most of us could.
No. That's actually an interesting segue. Speaking of the relationship between the media and law enforcement, how would you describe that relationship?
I think it's very contentious. And I wish that it weren't. And you know, for the longest time, because I was only on one side of it, and I kept thinking, you know, we're very fair. The media is fair. We are reporting facts. I don't know why officers in law enforcement don't like us so much. Boy. I had some friends within, you know, whether it was the sheriff's department or Albuquerque police or state police. And so they were always very helpful about providing information, and I didn't bug, and they were great. And there are some great sources within law enforcement that do help. But I have seen firsthand, now working for the state of New Mexico and dealing with reporters, because I'm a communication director and I have to set up interviews, and I've given information to many reporters. And for a time, I was working right at the heart of COVID. Right before the vaccine came out, I was asked to work for the Department of Health. So I was answering these reporters constantly. And what came out of it, I would sit back and think, that's not what I said. That is not what I said. Like, where did you get that? And how did you misconstrue that? And it gave me a whole different appreciation for the other side. We as journalists thought we were so fair and balanced. And there are some that definitely are, and they try to get it right, and they will call you back and say, this is what I am writing, is this correct? Those journalists I am so grateful for, but there are not a ton of them.
Really? Like, how many do you think there are, percentage wise?
I think everybody would defend themselves, so I don't know.
So everybody, if you ask them, everybody says, oh, I'm fair and balanced. But if you actually did it objectively, it's probably 10% or something.
You know, I think it's a practice that I wish we would do more of, because I can honestly say that I never called somebody back to say, let me make sure that I got this correct.
Yeah.
In my mind, I had it correct. I understood you. I know what you said, and this is how I'm going to convey it. They can also pull out just the little pieces just enough to sort of, they've got an angle on a story, and I've had that happen to me. We give a ton of information, but what gets pulled out is a tiny snippet which fits their agenda. Really, this is the story we want to do, and you said that one sentence, but nothing else was said. They didn't use. Yeah. So man, do I have a whole different appreciation for the other side, and no wonder, officers in particular. Oh my gosh. I mean, we show up on the scene, we're in your face, trying to get information and have to be first for a story when really the whole story isn't even put together yet. I get it. And on behalf of, if I've ever done that, I am so sorry.
So looking back on it, do you think of people or you don't have to name names, but who did kind of do that to police officers, who might have done pulled out a little snippet or looked for their own little agenda?
You know, it's hard because as an anchor, when something comes, by the time it gets to you, I wasn't there interviewing them. The reporter was there interviewing them, or the photog was there interviewing them. So it's hard for me to say. I don't know. I only know now from my side that I gave a ton of information and I watch it happen. But I'm sure that it does. I'm sure that it does. But I can't honestly say, yes, I saw that and that was a definite example of something because I wasn't there.
You were fully drinking the Kool-Aid at that time.
Yes.
That's why.
Yes.
So you didn't think it happened.
No, I didn't. I didn't quite understand it. And I kept thinking, you know, why do they not like us so much?
We're innocent little lambs.
Oh, boy.
So we talked about sort of the trauma with Victoria Martin. Did you guys get any training on how to take care of yourself mentally, or did anyone talk to you about that being a journalist, or how did you end up learning how to balance that?
That's an incredible question, honestly. And no, there was never training, not in school. Throughout the 20 years in my career, there was never any kind of sit down that said, hey, we know this information can be kind of rough. Are you okay? This is how you can handle it. Never. So it's a very interesting question and something, although, yeah, you know, again, we're just conveying that information to tell stories, to tell people what's happening. But if you're at home and you're having a reaction, then you can bet we are too.
Sure.
But no, that was never addressed.
That's really interesting. I mean, that concept of vicarious trauma. I mean, you guys are a part of every trauma the community goes through. You think it would be beneficial for them to have some system where you could seek help or at least talk to you about some of the things that might happen. When I first started with APD, it was a lot like that. But nowadays, I'm happy to say that, you know, with Doc and Matt Tenney and really putting together a great program, that I think officers now are much more willing to take care of their mental health than when I was going through the academy.
I'm so pleased to hear that. I spoke with a man recently who happened to be at the Capitol riot when that happened on January 6th. And he retired soon after, within days afterwards. But he was explaining that there was, afterwards, there wasn't enough to come through and offer. And he said that when he was younger, his partner was shot in front of him and killed. And he had to be there to, he was trying to resuscitate him. He was so very traumatic for him. And he was put on leave. And when he came back, he said that his captain invited him in and was sitting there on his computer and just looked up over his readers and said, so you were there for this incident? And he said, you know, yes, sir. And he said, you okay? You good? All right, get back to work.
Man.
That was it. That was the extent. Yeah. I mean, oh my gosh. So I think the mental health side of every aspect is so important. And I know Niels has introduced that in a way in our personal lives and in his professional life that is outstanding.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, that's very sweet. I think we've had this discussion before, but does the local media risk glorification of violence, especially gun violence?
Do we have gun violence here?
What?
Is that a thing?
Every time there's always that risk that when you talk about things in a way that can be irresponsible, that it definitely can glorify something awful. And not everybody has the capacity to process it in a way where they can make decisions that wouldn't affect a community. They might think, or it's kind of I know during COVID, people were buying guns like crazy.
Yeah.
Just buying guns. And it was kind of that mass push. Well, if they're doing it, I should do it. I feel like that's something I should do. And we're talking about it constantly. You know, we're talking about gun violence constantly. And everybody is sometimes taking on that mentality, well, I don't want to be the one caught without a gun, sure, so I'm going to go get one. But there isn't that responsibility behind, do you know how to use it?
Right.
Do you have a safe for it? Do you know how to lock it up and handle it and genuinely know how to use it? But it can get glorified. Anything can. You have to be very careful. Like with when you talk about suicide, there's a or death by suicide. You have to make sure that you're careful as a journalist in how you're reporting that and not giving a ton of details. You don't want it to seem like it's glorified in any way.
I mean, that sort of comes up to the next question of, you know, if you report the news about a new movie or a show or a rally or something, you always give information about this is where it is and that's where to go. But if it's like there's a gun violence, like these people all got murdered in your neighborhood, next door.
Yes.
It's not like this is what you can do to help reduce gun violence. You were talking about gun safety. Like, here's some local gun safety courses or something. There's none of that. There's no counterweight.
That is an excellent point. There isn't. There. After these stories, it's become so common that you're right. Okay, and now for a check on the weather. I mean, it comes in one ear and out the other. And I can even say in reporting that so often that it wasn't shocking anymore. It just didn't have a shock value or factor. It was like, oh, another shooting. Okay. We'll read about it. You know, again, kids, things that were outside of the norm, those would be very different. But your average, sadly, everyday shooting just didn't faze me.
Yeah.
And no help afterwards. You're right. Nothing that says, hey, you know, use guns responsibly.
Brought to you by the NRA. Yes. So about for 4 or 5 years now, we've had this concept of fake news. Do you think that was going on, you know, before that term got coined? And what do you think that phenomenon is about?
Well, I think part of that and where it was coined, I think that was, you can manipulate the media and, you know, wanting to take the focus away from yourself. It's easy to say what you're saying is a lie. That's a lie. That's a lie. That's fake. That's fake. That's fake. Well, is it? I mean, sometimes it's not. It's absolutely not. But there are different stations that claim to be news stations. Really, they're not. They're not genuinely about news. They have a different agenda. And they're trying to, they're kind of more of an entertainment station.
Did you want to list those stations?
No, I don't.
Let's not do that.
No, but I think you have to be very careful about where you're getting your information and trying to keep it as neutral as possible. Right now, everybody's so divided and heated in their beliefs, more so than ever. And it's disheartening to me. It's sad to me. I find that, like, where's our American spirit? How come we're not all Americans? And so you have to be very careful. And some of the news is, you know, you can appeal to anybody. You can kind of take anything that you want. See, I believe that. Right. That right there coincides with my belief. So that's what I choose to believe. Yeah. And it may or may not be true.
Especially if it's already curated to pick out the stuff that you think the audience is going to want.
Right.
So any advice on news consumption about where people can get sort of fair and unbiased?
Do not get your news from social media.
That's good advice.
Yeah. Don't do it. There are a few people out there who just decide to make a statement. There's nothing to back up what they're saying at all. And believing that, and then it just spreads. It spreads like just ugly rumors and wildfire, and people just glom onto it and change their behaviors based on rumors, based on something that somebody decided to make up. So please don't think for yourself. Don't get your news off of social media. The best thing is to try to choose different reputable that have been around for a very long time. Like, I think print journalism is fantastic. And you can get print journalism on your computer.
Yeah,
you can. I know. So reading about something from a source that you, that genuinely, like PBS, what nobody, you can't go wrong with PBS. You know what I mean? Like, the, you know, they're just a neutral, let's just share a story. NPR often has a lot of just informative information. The Wall Street Journal, it's just information. So,
yeah, I mean, but I'm interjecting, yes. Even though I think like NPR, PBS are probably more left leaning, and Wall Street Journal is more right leaning, but they're all still in the fat of the curve, mm-hmm. for the most part. Mm-hmm. So I think those are good examples of places to get news. What about, you know, for cops who are watching the news, do you suggest that they not watch the news? How should they take things with a grain of salt? I mean, what do you suggest in terms of mental health and consuming news media?
I don't know many officers that like to watch the news because it infuriates them. So, you know, they're gonna see a story that's run and say, oh my gosh, there's no way. Yeah. So I wouldn't want to add to their mental health status by encouraging them to watch the news. But I would encourage them to just know that we're all trying to do our job to the best of our ability, and we don't always get it right. And that works on both sides. So, you know, trying to just find a little bit of, all right, well, that wasn't the best. That really wasn't what I was trying to say. And you know what's helpful to journalists? I will say, if officers notice or they an interview was done with them and the facts were wrong, let that reporter know. Hmm. Let the news director know. Reach out and say, hey, I just wanted to tell you that's not what I said. And let the news director tell them this is not what we said. If they care, they will correct it. They will say, you know what, we need to make a correction. And news doesn't like to do that, but that's fair. That's fair. So honestly, officers should reach back out to that reporter and say, I just need to let you know this was not correct.
Well, that's interesting. I have a whole list of officers that I'd like to speak to you.
Well,
sort of piggybacking on what Doc said, I think there is a responsibility of the media to sort of out bad officers that are not doing the right thing. But I also think there's sort of a line, you know, when it comes to, you know, if I had to guess about what percentage of media coverage is of bad officers compared to good one, I would say it's not really even at all. So what do you think about that?
I think that's really unfortunate. And that too is very disheartening for me. You know, we're focused so much on what officers may be doing wrong. And there may be some instances that have taken place with a handful of officers, and yet everybody gets grouped in, much like journalists.
That's you know, true.
Some of them are terrible and we all get looped into it. So all journalists are terrible and all cops are terrible. Well, no, they're not. On both sides, no, they're not. Some really do take their jobs very seriously and try to do it to the best of their ability. And while upholding some morals and some character and, so I think you've got to think of it on both sides. Officers, you know, it is disheartening and it's very sad to me. And I wish the media does have control over, why don't we do some positive stories about officers? You know, we report the bad stuff, but we neglect to sometimes reach out and say, you know what, we're also going to run this story today where this officer stopped and helped this woman and did whatever. And who knows? I mean, whatever it is, but some of the positive things that are going on within APD, do reporters call and ask, hey, what do you have going on within APD that's really positive right now? We'd love to do a story like that. They don't, and they should.
Why do you think why is it that they don't? Is it just not sell? Is it not consumable?
I think we go through phases, and spending 20 years, you know, on the news and really looking at these phases of how news is working. And there was a time when it was nothing but hard news, I can remember. So we don't want anything soft in there. It is nothing but hard news, and that's it. And then we got a little soft, and we would do some feature stories. But we started to notice it was all about the ratings. Well, the ratings kind of fall when we do feature stories. Mm-hmm. People are not as interested in those. And so let's go back the other way, and we'll
gun
kind
violence.
Of do. Yeah. I mean, sadly, it's very sad. But some places are trying to find a balance in some way. And
features lower ratings.
Yeah.
When you go in depth on a study, people just don't have the attention span for mm-hmm. a whole like 2 minutes of a news story.
Yeah. I mean, that's it was kind of sad. We ended up cutting him. We had a reporter that was an incredible feature reporter and would put together the most amazing stories. And then they just did away with it.
Feature is like how long?
I mean, it would be around 2 minutes. But 2 minutes of your time. And somehow that doesn't hold people. We really like CBS This Morning, which I haven't watched in a while, on Sunday mornings. It's just on Sunday mornings because it's nothing but positive news.
Wow.
Nothing.
I know. That's refreshing. What I have an app on my phone that's called Good News, and that's where I get a lot of news.
But it's
and there's
nice.
Not, they call from the general news media. There's just not that many articles. They're like,
right?
Unequivocally, like, this is good news. Yeah.
Yeah, it's sad.
It's hard to find.
Yeah.
People like bad news. So when cops sit around, they often talk about, you know, how the media is terrible and they're ruining everything and you guys are awful. What's going on inside the newsroom? Do you guys like, oh, the cops are so wonderful and they're so easy to work with and we love them? I mean, you could be honest.
Yeah. I think there isn't a large opinion. It's more how can we talk to them? We're looking for information. And so the conversation usually revolves more around how do we get the information that we need to get? So there isn't always an opinion about it other than you guys can kind of be obstructionist is the way we see it. You know,
is that the word you use, obstructionist?
No, it's not, but I'm trying
you
to
can use the real word. It's okay.
I can
guy
say
was
that.
A dick.
I know. No, a cock blocker. You know what I mean? it's more that that we really do just are trying to get the information, and a lot of times we run into these walls.
Sure.
Just no, no, and no, and no. And so, all right, let me try to get a hold of the PIO. But the PIO is busy, and they may call you back, they may not call you back. That part can be very frustrating, or they just send out a statement, so you don't get a chance to actually interview them. But I don't believe that journalists are sitting around speaking poorly of law enforcement. I totally get how law enforcement feels about reporters. I do. But, you know, one of the things that law enforcement could do is to try to embrace it. You'll have much more coverage, and it will come across as almost positive, but much more familiar with the public. If you are able to call reporters back, give them an interview, and then talk to them like they're people instead of using the police lingo. One of the people that I remember we loved on air, just loved to interview him, was former state police chief Pete Cassettis. Because he was so colorful. He wouldn't say the perpetrator headed southbound on, you know, Silver at 1207. You know, he would just say, man, that guy took off down the street, but our officers were right there and we just tackled him. And so trying to make it much more humanized and not so official is helpful for people to understand. It's also helpful for reporters to understand. They may get it right if you talk to them in a way that makes sense, you know, that reporters would understand, because we don't always know the police lingo. So I think that would be helpful and, I don't know, a little more humanizing.
That's fascinating, because we teach officers to drop the lingo when they talk to folks out on the street, because it becomes more of a person to person, as opposed to person to cop.
Exactly.
And so, yeah, that's interesting that you brought that up.
Yeah.
Yeah, people feel like that's how you're supposed to talk to a cop. And so that's what they...
Just the facts, man.
Yeah.
The community would embrace that. So if you want to have, to showcase something that's more positive, officers should show a little more emotion. You know, be a little more human about the stuff that you just saw. Our officers are really affected by this right now. We're having a very tough time within our department. This is emotional for many of us. Say things like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And that softens that mindset from the community that police can be so hard, or that they're bad in any way. You know, they're not. They're here to serve and protect you. And that's really what we have to remember. So try to humanize yourself.
Where do you just changing subjects altogether? Where do you draw the line in terms of the ethics of, like, the police are investigating a crime, say even a murder, but just say a crime, and you guys want to get the information, but they're like, we can't give it out because you'll jeopardize the investigation, and you think they're just stonewalling. I mean, where do you say, okay, well, wait, I mean, how do you figure that out?
Here's, again, this is about relationships. And if officers would just understand that reporters are trying to do their job, essentially, you don't have to tell them as much, and you can't. But if you take the time to pull that reporter aside and you say, listen, we've got people here. You're essentially it's not like you're giving them a ton of information, but you say, here's why. We've got to make sure that this gets taken care of first and this gets taken care of first. And then I will call you or try me back in a couple of hours. Then I'll see what kind of information I can give you. But for the time being, we just can't. It'll jeopardize our whole investigation. I'm sure you can understand that. But I don't want you to go away with nothing. Let me just, you know, give them something, but that won't jeopardize the investigation in any way. But at the same time, try to form a relationship with that reporter, because then also if they get it wrong, you can call them back and say, hey, by the way, this was not correct. But taking that tiny little minute to acknowledge they're trying to do their job and just talk to them instead of
no comment.
Right.
Do you remember, now going on a personal note, when we would have parties or get-togethers at our house,
yes,
it'd be like cops on one side and reporters on the other. So bad. And a few doctors.
It's
in
true.
The
we would invite people, because I invite all my friends from the station, and he would invite cops. And you're right, it was divided. Oh,
so bad. We couldn't even do it in our own house.
No, nobody would mingle or talk to them. So I hope that I understand. I really do. I more now than ever where law enforcement's coming from and why they're so frustrated with the media. But I hope that they'll just take a minute and try to explain things, make sure, you know, hey, call me back with your story so I can hear it and tell you if that's correct. I don't know, but that'll help. When you just stonewall them, they can only go off of what they know. And sometimes it's not correct, but nobody told them otherwise. So it would help if they...
I think part of the problem is people don't want to talk because they're afraid of that first thing you mentioned. Mm. They're going to look for that one little nugget and pull it out and use it out of context. So better just to not say anything.
And I get that. Yeah. I do. Now I understand that. And sometimes there is an agenda. What responsible journalists should be doing is reporting facts and making it fair. Mm-hmm. So if a certain... you know, a reporter or station has an agenda on a story, then really a good journalist would make it fair and say, okay, you're disputing that. You show me why. Show me why. And let's give 30 seconds to this side and 30 seconds to this side. And instead of you get the one sound bite that's a kind of a defense sentence, you know, it comes across as terrible.
Yeah,
so,
So, a lot of negative stuff we've talked about. What was the absolute best part about being a journalist?
I loved telling stories to people that this is my home. This is my family. My family was waking up and watching me. I was talking to my family and informing them. I'm talking to my friends and my community. Teachers that I went to school with. And, you know, it was nice to feel like I was trying to inform them. And I really enjoyed that part of storytelling. I'm trying to just tell you a story. And that was my favorite.
Nice.
Yeah. I've been actually doing a lot of research on evolution and the importance of storytellers back before we had news. And I think, you know, journalist is sort of the modern version of the storyteller. And, you know, I don't think it's mostly for our survival nowadays. You know, we can just go to the supermarket instead of hunting. But I think the journalists that I've seen and I've respected are really good at telling a story and making that human contact and not just reporting the facts and gun violence and here's how many people died. And so I really do think it's journalists are sort of the modern adaption of the storytellers of old.
That's nice. I think, you know, stories have also gotten so much shorter. In the news, we used to have 2 minutes to tell a story, which honestly, when you think about it, seems very short. If somebody said, tell me the entire story of you graduating from high school in 2 minutes, what happened that day? It's hard for people to do that. So you learn to just try to be as concise as possible. But then most of the stories that they read on air are 15 to 20 seconds long. Mm-hmm. 30 seconds is long. So a 15 to 20 seconds to try to tell a story is difficult. And so that's why I like print journalism, because you can get so much more in there.
It's like people's attention spans. I mean, one of the reasons for the phenomenal success of TikTok is because people can consume things in 15-second intervals, right? Okay, done with that. Okay, done with that. It just seems like people's attention spans have been getting smaller and smaller, and they want to just be entertained all the time with something different, you know, just beam it into my head constantly.
It's true, though, and that's, isn't that sad?
It is sad. If they can't do a 2-minute in-depth article about something interesting in their own state, I don't know.
I know.
I got to keep reading the good news.
I know.
Just live in my bubble.
But
Pollyanna.
Yes.
But
my brother called me Pollyanna last night.
Did he?
Two.
Well,
you were 24 hours.
You inherently are a happy person. He has a very calm and kind disposition.
Thank you, sweetie.
That rarely wavers.
I agree.
It's lovely to be around. And we joke because I am not that person.
The yin to that yang.
Yeah, oh, yeah, definitely.
Did you want to do the segments?
Yeah.
Okay. The mindfulness?
Sure.
Have you heard of mindfulness?
I have heard of mindfulness.
What have you heard?
Three things you've heard about mindfulness is the question.
Okay. So mindfulness is the practice of slowing down, taking your time to be aware of everything that's going on, not only internally, but externally, just in your environment. So it is a very heightened awareness of, where am I sitting right now? How do I feel? Are my feet on the ground? What do I hear? What do I smell? What do I feel? And then it's just trying to stay in that moment and kind of let everything else go away. It's letting just those feelings in, or whatever you're thinking, and then it kind of leaves. And that's my idea of mindfulness.
Nice.
Yeah. Have you ever tried it?
A little bit.
We did a class together.
We did.
You did not like the teacher.
I didn't.
Whose name we will not mention.
No, I did not like her at all.
Or him.
Or him.
They're not that many in this town, so.
But that makes a big difference if you like the instructor or not,
for
sure.
Yeah, you guys didn't click. That happens sometimes.
Sure. Yeah. Niels has been practicing mindfulness and meditation. Gosh, you started right before we got married.
Yeah.
So 7
kept
years?
Kept me sane through the marriage.
I'm sure it has. I mean, there's a lot. There's a lot to take in.
Well, the next question was how mindfulness has affected you, but obviously it's affected you in your personal life.
I'm a nice just byproduct sort of it. I just kind of get to absorb because Niels practices it so much. Mm-hmm. And so him being calm and or just being aware is sometimes really nice. And so I get to just benefit from that.
That's nice.
His energy within the home or how he keeps things calm. It's definitely something everybody could use. And certainly I could. And I don't make time for it. There are different, I have a different level of trying to just sit and enjoy what I might be doing right then. Mm-hmm. And I pay attention to details. So I notice a lot of things. I notice people. I notice behaviors. I just take note of a ton of things. And so I'm mindful of those kinds of things around me, but I could increase to a whole new level. I just don't.
No, you are very observant. That's absolutely true. Yeah, I can attest to that. So you remember stuff too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
You don't remember stuff?
I don't remember stuff. That is true.
Oh, bless his heart. I mean, it's one of those, and it's not intentional. Not that he's not trying or he doesn't care. I have to sometimes just say, okay, this is important. So I need you to look at me and really, I need you to hear what I'm about to say.
Yes.
Because otherwise, if we're just talking in passing, then it just comes and goes with him.
ADHD and mindfulness. Match made in heaven.
I remember the first time I met Niels, he introduced himself to me like four times during the day. And at first I was really offended, but then, like you said, as you get to know him, it's nothing malicious. It's just kind of how his mind works.
It is. He did that to my brother.
He does not happy.
Oh, man.
He still holds a grudge.
He kept introducing himself to my brother. Uh-huh. And my brother's like, oh, my gosh. Like, wow.
Stepbrother.
But I did have to say, like, please, he's not doing it intentionally. He would forget his wallet when we'd go on dates mm-hmm. when we started dating. And at first I thought, wow, really?
This
are
is
you
where you're going?
Serious? We just finished dinner. He's like, oh, I forgot my wallet. And I thought, whoa. And I think I had mentioned it to the point where he had to say, oh my gosh, no, really, that happens. And it happens all the time. Here we are, we've known each other 10 years. It happens all the time. So
it's gotten better.
It's fine now.
So do you think that there's a place for mindfulness in journalism?
Yes. I think if journalists, what's so tough is we're on a deadline. So your mind doesn't stop to really think about what you're doing, what you're writing, what message you're trying to convey, or how you might be feeling about a certain story, because we have to be careful and not show an opinion. So I think if journalists could slow down and do that, I think that might be really helpful to keeping it fair and balanced. But we don't. It's so quick. It's so quick. You have these turnarounds that are so fast.
Right.
So.
Yeah. So we have another segment that we like to do. What's going to happen is you're going to hear like probably 15-second clip of a movie.
Oh.
And your job is to try and
guess a TV show.
Or a TV show.
Okay.
And you're going to try to guess what that is.
Okay.
I'm going to make sure the audio works.
And Niels was just telling us how much you remember, so this should
be. Oh, boy. Depends on if I watched it or not.
Are you ready?
See. Yes.
The bishop wore buttless chaps to the bat mitzvah. Bat mitzvah. The garden gnome had a normal size penis. The garden gnome had a normal size penis.
Yes.
Any Anchorman. Yeah. Whether that was, I think that might have been the second one and not the first, but or third. But.
Yes, that was very good. People don't do that, huh? Little voice warm-ups and stuff.
Some I've seen it happen, but no, that really doesn't happen anymore. There's a reason that there's a whole parody that was made, because there are truths behind it. Yes, mm-hmm. they're exaggerated, but there are those guys in the newsroom that just think they are amazing. And those who just take themselves way too seriously, and being on air is such a big deal. And then all of it is from the sports guys to it, all of it. There's some truth behind those things. And otherwise it wouldn't have been so successful. And most of us or that were or are in the media find it hilarious. We're not offended by it at all. It's very funny.
I thought it was a documentary.
Okay, this one's a little harder. Okay. I think this is the hardest of the three. Are you ready?
Yes.
A lady always buttons her top button. If you buttoned your collar on television, you would be a lady. If you spilled water all over your front, I would like that too. It's a fan.
That's it.
No clue.
Newsroom.
Oh.
She's the woman who's the economist. I know you've seen the show because
we watched it together. But that, I would have had to have heard Jeff Daniels, I think, in order to...
I was going to do the Jeff Daniels one, but it was too obvious.
That's okay.
Is that the one where he's like, Why America's Not.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, yeah, that's a really good one.
That was
monologue.
Good, right? Yeah.
I was going to do that quote, but that's a little controversial for our...
Well.
But do you get that stuff? Comments on your looks? Like she was saying, you know, you should undo your top button and spill water on you.
Holy cow. I mean, that was probably the biggest downside, was that people felt like you weren't a person and that they can judge you every day and their opinion matters. So let me tell you that you kind of look like shit right now, that I don't like that dress, that you're fat, that your hair looks terrible. I mean, it was just constant.
Was it really like all the time?
Yeah. I mean, not terrible, but it would still just happen. Yeah. It was really ugly for people to do that. Like you're not allowed to for your weight to fluctuate, yeah, or right. for you to have your hair's not so awesome today. You know, it's they don't like your clothes. It's so rude.
Did you ever get the opposite? Like people say nice things about you or?
Yes.
More often than the bad?
People were always really kind, very kind to me. And when I would be out in public, and you've been a part of that,
yeah,
certainly. And
Mr. Mace.
Have you been called that? Awesome.
Oh, Dr. Rosenbaum. I mean, here he's earned it. And I think for the most part, people have been very, very kind, but I think a lot of that had to do with me, mm-hmm, and how I would embrace the public and talk to them and be a part of their lives. So that stuff matters. You know, you're not a big deal just because your job is on TV. You're really not. I mean, I read a teleprompter. How does that make me special? Mm-hmm. It's a different skill that I had. And I love that skill that I had, and it was awesome. But I think that sometimes people do get really full of themselves, and they don't have any reason to. And so I would make sure that you take a moment. People are coming up to you, and just take a moment and say, you know, gosh.
People felt like they knew you.
Yeah, they did. But there was one time, and I thought, wow. My grandma had died, and I needed pantyhose, and I was running into Dillard's to just grab a quick pair of pantyhose and run out. And later I got an email from this woman who said, "You are horrible. You are a terrible person. How dare you? My daughter tried to say hi to you in Dillard's the other day, then you just ignored her." And I said, "Oh my gosh, my grandma just died." And she goes, "Yeah, well, we all have bad days." Like, I mean, wow. I am so sorry.
Adoring fan, right?
You know, so upset and offended. And people may have stuff going on. I mean, normally I don't do that. I would always take time. So people had a lot of nice, kind things to say. When I was younger, I got a lot of mail from the prison.
Oh, cool.
So they had stuff to say.
That's how you met Niels, right?
Yeah, right.
Oh, my. Okay, here's the last one. Okay. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm. One pork chop! One!
Hey, Frank!
It's disgusting, right? Sick.
We just washed the hair.
No, I work on my hair a long
time. Saturday Night Live.
Saturday Night
Fever. Saturday Night Fever. Yeah. John Travolta.
Yes. Yep. Do you work a long time on your hair for the news industry?
People don't know this, and they assume that we had hair and makeup done for us, but we didn't.
I thought you did in the beginning.
No, I had an allowance for hair and makeup.
Oh, God.
No.
Oh, wow. I always assumed you guys had just, like, because in the movies and TV, there's always somebody.
Nope.
Huh.
Nope. I think they do at some of the larger markets, but no. We all do our own hair and makeup. We buy our own clothes, and you know, have to get yourselves ready. And that was hard, getting that ready every day was really tough.
Especially with the people pointing out, like, if there's one little thing that went wrong.
Yeah. One hair out of place.
And they would. And oftentimes they didn't. And it would, you know, you only hear from the ones that there's something wrong with you if you're going to take the time to write in or call to insult somebody or be hateful or mean.
Sure.
There's something wrong with you.
Yeah.
So another segment we have, I'm going to ask you, I think, five questions, okay, and what I'd like for you to do is answer as quickly as possible.
Okay.
Preferably without thinking about your answer.
Got it.
Are we ready?
I'm ready.
One person in history that you would like to give a hug to?
Oh, gosh. Abe Lincoln.
one person in history you'd like to punch in the face?
I can't say. There is one, but I'm not gonna. No.
Okay.
Okay.
Red or green?
Red.
Red.
Interesting.
Favorite TV series of all time?
Ooh, I'm gonna have to say probably Seinfeld. Although I don't watch them much anymore, but that's probably my favorite.
Last question, true or false, you met your husband at a mustache contest.
It is true. He won. This man can grow the most impressive mustache. And it was handlebar, but not only was it handlebar, and it didn't stop like right at his chin, It just kept going all the way down his neck. Yeah. And then if that wasn't enough, it was like, you know what? I'll just grow my sideburns too.
Yeah.
I might as well grow those all the way down my neck. So that it was impressive.
It is really quite impressive. Oh, I agree.
He definitely took first place, and then he asked me out.
The rest is history.
Rest is history.
Thanks again.
Yes.
All right. Thank you. Do you have any last words of encouragement or wisdom for our audience, which is hopefully many police officers?
I would like to just thank them. I really is the biggest thing, and I hope that they have somewhat of an understanding and some patience for journalists, and maybe a couple of tips on how to deal with them better. And really, I hope that everybody tends to come back around and recognize that these men and women are phenomenal people who are choosing to protect us, and we owe them a lot of gratitude.
Well, thank you. Yeah. And we owe you some gratitude, too. So thank you for coming.
Yeah, thank you very much. It was insightful to see things from the other side as a police officer. So we really appreciate you being here.
Thank you.
Excellent. It was great. Thanks again.